Heading towards lunchtime. Good morning. Brent Clark's filling in on the Evan Bray Show today. Oh, we got some great texts that are coming in here from people talking about their fright of watching Jaws 50 years ago or so when it first came out, and some other scary ones as well. We'll share some of these texts with you here in just a few minutes time, because right now I want to talk space with Samantha Lawler, who joins us once again on the show. Samantha, Associate Professor of Astronomy at the University of Regina. Hey, Samantha.
Hello.
Hey, just thinking about, and I know I'm putting you on the spot here, we didn't tell you I was going to ask you this, but thinking about scary movies, do you have a favorite space scary movie? You know, the alien ones freak me out. You know, watching
Alien. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Alien's got to be it. That's definitely the scariest space movie. Definitely. Yeah.
There's some added twist, isn't it, when you're in space where no one can hear you scream.
Exactly. And that's true. Physics.
It's great that we've got you on the show, because even this morning as I was getting ready, I was reading this amazing article about this new observatory high on a mountain. It's like 7,000 feet elevation in Chile. And this is apparently the biggest camera in the world. And I think about some of the incredible images that we see from James Webb and the Hubble over all these years. But this is this seems to be a whole new ballgame with this new observatory. Can you talk about it?
Yeah. So this is the Vera Rubin Observatory. The first light images, right? So the very first images that were taken have now been released to the public. So if you just go online and search for Vera Rubin Observatory first light, you will see the most incredible image. I will admit that I've spent a lot of my morning staring at this image because it's so incredible. Right. So it's this giant image of hundreds of galaxies, right? It's one of those images where when you look carefully, you can see a lot of the things that look like stars at first glance are actually entire galaxies of billions of stars, right? And it's this huge image. You can pan around and it just keeps going, right? It really makes you feel very small and insignificant. And sometimes that's a really good thing.
It says 3.2 billion pixels that are in this image and the depth of that field. And again, you know, I think about when they put Hubble up and they put James Webb out there, that the whole idea of that is the images wouldn't be constricted or influenced by the Earth's atmosphere. So what is it about this camera high in the mountains of Chile that is able to give us this incredible resolution?
Yeah, it's a really big mirror, right? So it's 8.5 meters. It's a huge mirror. So it's collecting a lot of light. It's way up on a mountaintop, so the sky is very, the air above it is very still. Mm-hmm. So it's just a really good sight. It's also going to keep visiting the same spots on the sky over and over and over, covering the entire sky every few days. It's going to discover something like millions of new asteroids. Like, it's just incredible what it's going to discover in our solar system, in other galaxies, right? It's going to be incredible.
It makes you think all the more, at least me in my mind, the tiny little speck of dust that we live on in this grand universe and the problems that we have as a human race. And then you look at what's out there. And when I see these numbers, I'm reading the article and I'm thinking, is this right? Like 20 billion galaxies that it's going to observe over the next 10 years. Like 20 billion galaxies?
Yeah,
this
right.
I can't get my head around that.
Yeah, and each of those galaxies has billions of stars, and each of those stars can have planets. Like, it's completely mind-blowing.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And yet, this beautiful planet that we live on is the only one that we know of that has life on it, for sure, right? So it's a really special place. So it both makes you feel insignificant and also really special at the same time.
So a good way to kick off our segment, talking about this Vera Rubin Observatory. What was her story? Are you familiar with Vera Rubin?
Yeah. So she was an astronomer. She did a lot of really great work showing, she discovered dark matter. So dark matter is, basically, like when astronomers find something that they don't understand, it's called dark. Right? So dark matter is mass that we know is there, but we don't know what it is. Right. So she discovered this by looking at very carefully at other galaxies and measuring how fast the stars are orbiting and showing that there's a lot more mass there than we can see, something like 10 times as much mass as we would expect just based on how many stars we can see. So that's pretty weird, right? So, you know, you talk about how tiny we are. It's even more disconcerting to know that most of the mass of the universe, we don't even know what it is. So we have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, you get on that, would you?
Yeah, I would be happy to.
Again,
and we have this big, fancy new telescope to use now.
Oh, I know. Well, and how do people access that? Is it a team that is there on site, or is it astronomers from all over the world are able to access that and put in requests for viewing?
Yeah, so this telescope is a survey telescope. So there's been astronomers working for many years trying to decide the best way to look at different parts of the sky over and over and over to do different types of science. So, you know, how many supernovas can you find, and how many new asteroids can you find, and how many galaxies can you study, trying to balance all of those different science cases together. So astronomers have been working on this for a really long time. It's also just so much data, right? That's a really big challenge with this, right? Every single image, you know, you talked about how many pixels that is, right? Think about how much data every single image is, right? It's we're talking petabytes of data. And so how do you access that? How do you distribute that? How do you get the right? So there are astronomers in Canada who are working on the best ways to get that data to Canadian astronomers. There's astronomers in other countries doing the same thing. It's a huge team effort. But all the data will be public eventually, so anyone can go look at it.
And when you see them talking about over 10 years observing 20 billion galaxies,
yeah,
that's only, you know, that's because they're in the southern hemisphere of Earth. So that's just really still a small portion of our sky, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's less than half, right? I mean, or a little more than half, I guess. But we actually have most of our telescopes are in the northern hemisphere. So for a long time, we've had a bias toward having better studies of the northern half of the sky. So now all of a sudden, we're going to have way better view of the southern half of the sky. So we're going to catch up down there.
They've got a YouTube channel up. You can see some of the images on there already. The Vera Rubin Observatory, VeraRubin, if you want to just Google that, and you'll just be blown away by some of these images. It was certainly good timing having Samantha Lawler on today, Associate Professor of Astronomy at the University of Regina. Is there any other space news of interest?
We continue to be close to solar maximum, so it's still a good time to keep watching for auroras. We had pretty good show a couple weeks ago at this point. So you know, I always check a couple of different websites to see if there's a good chance of auroras on a given night. I really like spaceweather.com and NOAA, N-O-A-A, a U.S. federal agency. They've got really good information on when auroras might be coming. So I've been checking that almost every night because the odds of auroras are so good. Of course, right now the nights are so short that it's tricky to actually, I don't know, I find it hard to actually stay up late enough to see auroras at this time of year. but it's worth it.
Absolutely. Do you spend much time on earthly matters, keeping an eye on what's going on politically with NASA, SpaceX's most recent explosion, and some of the other things that are happening? You know, even with the International Space Station, there's all this talk out there of issues with it, and they're going to have to decide soon about its future life.
Yeah. There's a lot of talk about, yeah, how do you bring that down safely, right? Like we've seen here in Saskatchewan, what happens when satellites fall, and land on people's farms and stuff, right? So, the space station is huge, right? It's like multiple buses stuck together. That's going to be a real challenge to bring it down safely. And of course, yeah, all the funding cuts that we're seeing in the U.S., right? Here in Canada, we're not seeing funding cuts, but so much science depends on NASA, right? Like, mm-hmm. So I work with many astronomers in the U.S. I depend on telescopes that have huge amounts of U.S. funding, right? So it's very worrying because, yeah, like there's so much to look at. We've built these huge, beautiful telescopes, and once they're built, it actually takes a lot less funding to keep them running. So it's just very, very sad to see some of the cuts that are coming all this beautiful science that we could be doing that's not going to happen because it's not getting funded.
Yeah. Samantha, it's always a pleasure, man. You make my day with your passion for space and astronomy. Samantha Lawler, Associate Professor of Astronomy at the U of R. Thanks so much for your time, and we'll talk again.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Clear skies, everybody.
All right, Samantha Lawler. Yeah, how about the clear skies right now? In my part of Saskatchewan, Saskatoon, I'm looking out over the South Saskatchewan River, and we've clouded up. Maybe some more rain out there. Let's hope so. For those folks that need the rain, some areas west of Saskatoon got more rain than they really needed over the weekend. You look at some of the video from Eston, southeast of Kindersley there. Big downpour, and they had big rain a week ago out that way. It's like a river running through their park in the community and their golf course as well. You can check that out on the Evan Bray Show. Just get on Facebook, Google it as well for that water issues out Eston Way. The Evan Bray Show continues. Brent Laux in on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Line 1-877-332-TALK, 1-877-332-8255. We were talking earlier about the 50th anniversary of Jaws, the movie, and asking people their Jaws viewing experience or what movies scared the living daylights out of you. A guy just sent me this text, says, I was 10 years old, went to the theater that was below the Regina Inn. It was the big flood of Regina in 1977. Water filled the underground parking lot, entering the stairwell and into the theater. Evacuating into the flooded streets to find Broad and Albert's overpasses were closed. And he was watching a movie about a shark. Kate says, watched at the Old Strand Theater in Prince Albert with my bestie and her sister. We did not spend a lot of time swimming at the lake after watching that one. Kate went on to say, after the movie, we went to the A&W drive-in, had burgers and shakes. The attendee brought the food to our car on a big tray, and she was on roller skates. Those were better days. We have those memories. Hey, Kate, thanks for sharing that with us. What else do we got here talking about movies? This is Krista. I snuck out of bed at my aunt and uncle's house and laid at the corner of the living room with my head just peeking around the corner so I could see the TV. They had Jaws on. I'm 47 years old now. I still won't swim in a lake, and I have issues flying over water. I guess they were right to send me to bed. You know, and that's the thing. You know, when you're young, the stuff that stays in your brain, you know, it could be just one quick image from a movie or a TV show. And like, and here's mine. I can think about watching on TV. I was at our neighbor's house because we didn't have a TV, but the neighbor who was my grade one teacher, her husband was the pool elevator agent in town. And I was at their house because we didn't have a TV, mooching, watching TV. And I think it was a Sunday evening. And the Paul Newman movie, The Hustler, was on TV. That's from the early 60s. Kind of a story along the lines of Minnesota Fats. Paul Newman was this hustler pool player. Jackie Gleason was in it as well. And you know what stuck with me? There's a scene in that movie where he goes into this pool hall and he hustles these guys. Well, these guys don't like it. And at one point, it's just how they're able to do this in a movie. Without seeing it, you know what's going on. You see his face pressed up against the glass and he starts screaming as they're breaking his thumbs. You know, that's got to be 60 years ago I watched that, and just that sight in my head still sickens me. Eek. But we'll keep coming back, watching more scary movies. 1-877-332-8255. What else do we got here? Daryl from Moose Jaw. I was 10 when Jaws came out. I never saw the movie, but the commercial scared me so bad that I was scared to go in the water. And it's funny, you know, and you look at Jaws, like that shark nowadays, you look at it and say, oh, come on. How did something like that scare you? But just the music and the buildup and that scene where that woman in the water, the first victim of Jaws, oh, scary stuff. And I think we make it worse then in our minds, don't we? Evan Bray Show, Brent Laux with you. Thanks for all the texts in about Jaws and some of the other scary movies. Oh, I did see one that I wanted to. Oh, yes, here it is. This is from Chris. So the movie that scared me, this is Chris from Donwell, says the movie Hush Hush, I can't say it, Hush Hush, Sweet Charlotte. And he said, that's got to be close to 60 years ago, 50. That was Betty Davis in that. Gosh, I remember that too. Eek. Scary stuff that's out there. And it's amazing what Hollywood was able to do without really showing you a whole lot. They just plant the seed in your brain of something that's scary that's going on and music and the whole tempo, the buildup. Okay, your new news coming up here shortly. Coming up after 12 noon, we're going to talk about this idea. The Competition Bureau came out with a report recently recommending making it easier for foreign ownership of domestic airlines in Canada. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? When you look at the success of some airlines in the States, the success of some airlines in Europe, you think, well, gee, maybe they could bring that here to this country. So Stephen Mayberry is going to join me, and we're going to be talking about, from his perspective as CEO of the Saskatoon Airport, would it be a good thing to have more foreign ownership on some of our domestic airlines, or maybe get even more airlines going here, even though it was maybe foreign ownership. We'll get some thoughts from him coming up after 12 noon. And before I go at 12:30, filling in today for Evan Bray, we'll also listen to some of the comments that were made earlier on the show here from Jim Bentz talking about the hospitality industry in the province and some of the challenges they're seeing as far as staffing for hotels and restaurants. All of that coming up before 12:30. This is the Evan Bray Show on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME.